Angela. Hi, my name's Heidi. I am an alcoholic. Thank you so much, Sunny, for inviting me to come to this meeting and for the group for having me. I guess I think about step two, and I guess the question comes to my mind, like, how did I come to believe, right, in a power greater than myself? And I think for me, first, I had to believe that I had a problem, right? And if I look at my relationship with alcohol, when I started drinking, and this happened from the very first time that I drank, from when I started drinking, I couldn't control it once I started, right? Like I was 14. I remember standing in this group and feeling like I wanted to fit in, feeling like I wanted to be a part of. And as they passed this bottle and I had my first drink, it hit me. And I had this epiphany, right? That I, for once, for the first time in my life, I felt like I could fit in. I felt like I was a part of. But when I had that first drink, it wasn't like then I was like, oh, wow, this is great. I should do more. There was no thought to it. My body was like, we're going to drink more. There was, that's it. Like, and that's what happened every time that I drank. I couldn't control it. Once I started drinking, right? My body, my mind, it loves that effect produced by alcohol. And then when I, later on, when I would try to stop, I could never stay stopped, right? Like I can remember I tried several different things. I don't know if you guys have, but I moved. I thought geographical cures would be the thing that could help me stay stopped from alcohol, right? And so I would move, and then I would take me with me, and I would continue to drink. I would continue to have that obsession of the mind that would always take me back to a drink. I would take the first drink, and then the drink would take me off. My life, if I look at it, you know, I live it forward and I understand it backwards, but I can see how I would build my life up on my own power, right? Like I built my life up. One of those times that I moved to North Carolina, and I had this great big job and I had brand new cars and a brand new house, but I couldn't stop drinking. I thought that if I had all that stuff, I could stop drinking. And what happened was I ended up foreclosing on that house and happened to move back home to Pennsylvania. Another time I moved to Virginia Beach, and I remember I build my life back up while I'm drinking, because I don't know how I'm able to do it, but I'm able to build my life back up. And then I lose my job and I lose everything. It's like in my own power, I can only build things up so far, and then I lose it. I it completely comes crashing to the ground, you know. And that last time I moved home and I'm trying to build my life back up, because at this point I have no relationship with any kind of power. I mean, I grew up with a God in my life. I grew up in with lots of, like, the book talks about moral and philosophical convictions, right? My parents had a faith and they taught me their faith, and I grew up with that. And I, every time I moved, I remember I would try to go to some sort of religious entity in order to try to help me get my life together. But the problem was I couldn't walk into that religious place unless I was half loaded. So it never really, you know, it never quite worked for me. And so I move home again, and I'm at this point where I'm like, okay, I'm gonna do things differently, always on my own power, right? I'm gonna do things differently. So I get two jobs and I'm trying to work, and I ended up, I drove home one night completely loaded out of my mind, and I ended up killing someone. And that's what happens to me whenever I try to work on my own power and I try to build things up on my own power. As a matter of fact, I can remember in that moment on that day, I remember like returning to this power, and it wasn't like, help me. It wasn't, please let me stop drinking. It was, I can't believe that you've let my life turn into this, right? So I had this old idea that it was God's fault. Now it's God's fault that my life has turned into a total and a complete wreck. I had an inability to see where I was at fault for anything, right? I thought that life was just coming at me and it was absolutely miserable. And that happened on October 15th of 2007. And that set up a series of events. I'd love to tell you that I got sober, but again, I don't even know that I wanted to, right? Like, I don't think that that thought even crossed my mind to get sober, because for me, alcohol was the power. Alcohol was the power that could at least stop the chatter that was in my head. And I relied heavily upon that power. And now that I have this horrible accident that I caused, right? Now I've got that replaying in my head, along with the chatter that you're not good enough, along with the chatter that you're never going to make anything of your life. And alcohol was the only thing that could work to stop the chatter for a little while. And so I ended up, I was at my parents' house, and you know, I have a couple stints back and forth in jail. And they finally said, if you can't get sober, if you're not willing to get sober, you can't stay here. And I said, okay, I'm out, right? That was not on the table. And so I ended up living in a tent in the woods. I would sleep in a garage sometimes if the weather was bad. And then I met a lady that liked to drink like I like to drink. So I moved into her house. And on June 10th, 2009, I was living there, and it was not a bad situation for an alcoholic of my nature. And by that, I mean, like, there was alcohol in the house. There was other things in the house. There was a bed. There was food in the refrigerator, right? Like, it wasn't the worst day ever. And I can remember walking through the woods, and I couldn't get drunk enough anymore. I don't know if you guys understand that, but I couldn't get drunk enough to stop the chatter in my head. You know, like, my body would say, drink more, drink more, drink more. And of course I would, because I was under that allergy, but my head wouldn't stop. And I remember walking in the woods, because as a kid, I remember I used to love to walk in the woods. It felt like that was the place that I could connect with that power, that I could connect with this God that I didn't understand, that I felt somewhat okay. And so I'm walking through the woods, and I remember saying this prayer, could you please just take me? I was like at the very end of myself. And maybe looking back now, it's when I came to some sort of a realization, right? That my life was a total wreck. That it wasn't anything to really do with the outside circumstances. Cause again, I can build my life back up. Like, there's something in me that thinks that will happen at some point, but it was this heart-wrenching conceding to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. And it was almost like in that instant that I came to believe that maybe there was some sort of power that could help me. And the help that I thought when I prayed that prayer that day, when I said, God, please take me. I mean, what I really wanted was God to take me out of my misery, right? And at this point, I was like, not only out of my misery, but the misery that I'm causing to anybody who ever cared about me, anybody that ever loved me. Like, I'm just a detriment to society and to everybody. And if I wasn't here, it would just be better. And so I said, God, please take me. And I found that this power doesn't really like to answer prayers that I pray in the way that I think that he should, right? Like, and I think all my entire life, that's the way that I would pray. I would pray certain prayers, and then if they were not answered in the way that I thought they should be answered, then I just figured that power didn't want anything to do with me, that's what it was. It never really crossed my mind that maybe the prayers that I was praying, the things that I was praying for, were to my own selfish end, and that there's a reason that those prayers weren't answered, right? So when I pray, God, please take me, and I go back to that house a couple hours later. Now, I had that fatality I told you about. I did not get arrested on that day for that. And I went on in the next 8 months and continued to drink and drive, continued to do other things that would get me in trouble. So I had a very long list of charges. And so I had a probation officer that was kind of walking with me as I was my cases were going through the court. And so I get back to the house that day, and a couple hours later, there was a large knock on the door, and it was that probation officer, and she was coming to see me. And I wasn't sober. So she immediately took me to the county jail. And that was on June 10th, 2009. And I haven't had to take a drink since that day. And I look back at that and I think that I did. It was almost like that. Maybe there was a seed of faith that had been planted as a child, that maybe there was a power. There was a power that could help me. And in my desperation in the woods that day, I prayed for that power to please take me. And God saw fit to take me right to the county jail. You know, and I am forever grateful for that. I mean, at that day, I wasn't real happy about it. But looking back now, right, he took me to that county jail where I ended up meeting a chaplain who had studied our steps and had studied the Oxford group, and he was willing to walk anybody through it, right? And I remember AA would come in, right? And for me, the insanity is this insanity of the mind. It has way more to do with the chatter of my mind and the old ideas that are there. So AA would come in to the jail that I was in, and they would have their happy clappy meetings, you know, and they'd tell me about their life. And I remember thinking, that's good for you, but it's not going to work for me. I remember thinking, that's great that you get to leave here in your pretty clothes and you get to smell good and have your nice makeup on, but I'm going to spend the rest of my life in prison. And I should. I should be here. There's no hope for me, but thank you for coming in. You see, I had these old ideas that I should be punished to the most severest punishment, right? Like if I were to play God. And so I thought that's exactly what would happen. But what happened was I started working those steps. I started working those Oxford group steps first. And the jail ended up letting me out on house arrest, even though like it was really kind of crazy because with the charges that I had, that never would have happened. And I see in that time, as I started to work those Oxford group steps, what I was doing is I was starting to develop, right? I had come to believe that there was this power. And now I'd started to develop that relationship with that power. And somehow, some way, that power works in my life in ways I cannot understand. And so I get out and I'm on house arrest, and my sweet parents let me, you know, they let me go back to their house, and I started going to AA meetings, and I get a sponsor, and I start to work the steps through the big book, and many things occurred in the next couple of months. But one of the places that I saw this relationship with this power really manifest itself was in the courtroom the day that I was going to be sentenced. And so in Pennsylvania, when you have a vehicular homicide with a DUI, it's a 3-year mandatory state sentence. That's just what it is. You go to the state penitentiary. Again, I think that's not even enough. Like, I need to go away for a really long time. So I get to the courtroom. Now, prior to this, I had pushed everybody in my life away. I had no friends. I had absolutely nobody. I had my parents because my parents are good people, but I tried to push them away too. And I can remember writing in a journal, please, God, could I have one friend, asking that power, do you think it's possible? And when I walked into that courtroom was filled with people from Alcoholics Anonymous. Another thing happened that day as I went in for the sentencing, instead of pleading my case, I had written a letter of direct amends to that man's family because that's what our book says that we have to do, right? And I knew I didn't know if I'd be able to see them ever again. They lived in a different state. And so I read that letter of amends to them, and something else happened, that the judge asked that man's family if he could divide the charges between a DUI and a vehicular homicide, and that man's family agreed. And so what happened that day in that courtroom is that I did not get a 3-year mandatory state penitentiary sentence, but instead I got a 10-month county jail sentence. And that still overwhelms me today. And what I've come to find and what I've come to believe is that this power that I come to believe in, this power that's greater than myself, never makes too hard terms for those who seek him. He never makes it too hard for those that are seeking. And I'm not, and had I gone to prison, I would have said the exact same thing, but God didn't make too hard terms. When I started to seek that power, there were things that happened that were outside of my area of manipulation, right? Of control. There's something happened in that spiritual, you know, that spiritual place. And I think about that, developing that relationship with that power. And I don't know about you guys, but I feel like step two is just this, it's this turning point, right? It's this constant turning point where I can get to places today, right? And really, that's probably untreated alcoholism. I can be an untreated alcoholism without ever taking a drink. Like our book talks about it. I can get to this place of insanity where I'm in this emotional upheaval where I'm having trouble in this relationship and that relationship. And, you know, my husband snores and that boss never does what I think they should do. Like I can have trouble in personal relationships. I can be a prey to misery, and I'm not so much depression. I'm more of a self-pity kind of girl, right? I can get in those places of those bedevilments. But what happens is the reason that I get there is because I've now gone back to believing that I have the power to manage my life. I have the power to control my life. And what happens is when I turn back to my own power, I'm trying to figure everything out, which leads me to absolute insanity. And thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous, that you've given me these steps, right? That you show me how to get back to that place of sanity. So when I get to that place of insanity, it's like this turning point that I go back to sanity. There's been times in my sobriety that has happened. I was a few years sober and I got pregnant and I had this, it was a very traumatic birth for my son, and he only ended up living for 8 hours and then he died in my arms. And after that, it was awful. I mean, it was absolutely awful. I have no other words for it, right? Like Alcoholics Anonymous was there when I was in the intensive care unit. Alcoholics Anonymous was there when my husband came back from the funeral home because I was in intensive care. And then when I got out of the hospital here, there was a turning point, right? Like I felt like I was going back. And I know that there's a grief portion to that. I'm not saying that there's not grief, but there was a place in this week of events that happened that I didn't know was going to happen, that I was so unsure of, that I cried out to that power. I can remember getting home from the hospital and having a thought cross my mind that cinnamon schnapps would be a good idea. And it scared the crap out of me. I called my sponsor and I'm like, I don't even like cinnamon schnapps. What's going on? And you know, we talked about that. It wasn't like that obsessive thought that I used to get when I was drinking, but it was like you ever watch a leaf blow in the wind? You know, and I remember going to a meeting that night and we talked about it, and it was a Monday that happened, and Saturday was my son's memorial. And I remember being in that memorial and I thought there was no way that I was ever going to get through this, that I was ever going to recover from it. And I remember just saying a little prayer, God, please help me, right? Return me to sanity. And I look back to the back of the church and there was a woman who walked in. Now, this woman's name is Barbara. Barbara, when I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, it was full of men. And I cried the whole time, as you can probably imagine. And so after that meeting, those men had given me the number of two women. And they said, please call these women. They'll help you. And I was really afraid to call them. But I got out that card. And the first woman's name was Barbara. And I remember calling her and talking to her. She's the first woman I talked to in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, fast forward, Barbara had been, she had a brain injury. And she had been in the hospital for 9, maybe 10 months at this point at my son's memorial. And I look back, and in the back of the church, Barbara had gotten through enough rehab that she had been released the day before back home. She walked in and she had this beautiful scarf around her head and this big smile on her face. And I remember thinking, I'm going to be okay. The power restored me to sanity. Right? I can remember a little while later, I was, there was some people from AA, they had a beach house. And this man from Alcoholics Anonymous, his name's Charlie, again, that first man that I ever met in Alcoholics Anonymous that gave me Barbara's number, had a beach house in Atlantic City, gave my husband and I the keys and said, go to the beach, just go, heal, be, you know, do whatever you can. And I can remember walking on that beach and just thinking, things have to change. Like I got to get back into Alcoholics Anonymous. Things need to change. If you're there, could you please just help me? And I was running and I wanted to see the sunrise. That was my whole goal. It was the last day at the beach. I want to see the sunrise. And there was all these clouds and it was just yucky. And so I was like, I'll just turn around. And I started to go back and I see this man walking on the beach. And this man is older and he had his shirt off and he reminded me of my granddad. Now, my granddad had been gone for years, but he just reminded me of my granddad. So I stopped and I said, "Hello, how are you?" And he said, "How are you?" And we had like little, you know, chit chat. And he said, "Oh my, look." And he turned and I turned around and the clouds broke open and there was the sun, this beautiful sunrise. And I said, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to run that way. Thank you." You know, and I'm running and it hit me like, if that man hadn't have said, "Turn around and look," at that moment, I would have missed the sunrise. And oh my gosh, how great is God? This power is just, wow, he's at work. And I turn around because I'm going to tell this guy, right, about the power. And there's nobody there. There's nobody on the beach at all. And I think about how this power works in my life, right? This power is just amazing and just comes to me and when I'm willing to believe, right? This power does not make too hard terms. And so I didn't know that what was to come is that my husband and I, he ended up he's one of us. I mean, he'll admit that he's one of us. He ended up picking back up and grief just got to him. He didn't have the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous like I did. And our marriage ended up turning into a complete wreck. And I'm back to a place of insanity. I have this emotional upheaval. I have this fear of financial insecurity. I really do not know what to do. And so I'm back to trying all my, you know, all my methods, even though I don't realize they're my methods, right? So I go to counseling and I don't not counseling at all, but I go to counseling, but counseling is not a cure for my untreated alcoholism. I don't know I'm in untreated alcoholism. I go to church. Again, church isn't a bad deal, but it's not the cure for untreated alcoholism. And so I've got all this stuff going on. And I'm maybe only going to one or two meetings a week. I'm not real active in my home group, but I'm doing all this stuff because could I just stop feeling this way? Could I just stop feeling this insanity, right? And I remember being at a service. It was a church service, and I started to see all this stuff. You know, when I was a kid, I had watched somebody commit suicide, and I had my best friend had died, and I had. Like all this stuff had happened that made me to believe that God had really kind of abandoned me. Right. And so now my son's dead and now I'm going through this divorce and I'm really just thinking God has abandoned me. This is it. I'm done. This is my penance for all these bad things I've done. And I have this, like, I close my eyes and I can see all these events in my life. But what I see in these events in my life is like God, and I can't really describe what God looked like, but God was standing beside me through all these seemingly tragically events that I've been through. And I had this like, kind of like, man, God hasn't abandoned me. Okay. And I will go to walk out of the building and this woman taps me on the shoulder and she says, "I need to hand you this." And she hands me a note card that says, "I haven't brought you this far to abandon you now, God," and handed it to me. And I remember walking out of there and, you know, again, I was restored to sanity. And what that looked like that day is that I started going back to Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it's you guys. It's you guys that show me how to get sane, right? It's you guys that show me what is that soundness of mine. It's you guys that show me how to get this relationship back, right? With this power that's really, when they say God of my understanding, I don't understand this power. I don't understand how this power works. The only thing that I understand is that this power is infinite, that this power is way beyond anything that I could dream of or imagine. You see, I always thought that I knew exactly who God was, but the reason that I wanted to know exactly what this power was, because I could put the power in this little box, and then I would know what kind of buttons to push so that I could get what I wanted out of the box, right? And what you've taught me in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I just come to believe in a power. I don't come to believe in anything else. It's just this power, this infinite power that can restore me to sanity. And because I have this power, right? Instead of reacting to situations in the way that I used to do, and the way that I would react is that I would try to manage them. I'd try to control them. But now I can respond. Sometimes the response is to do nothing. Sometimes the response is to pause. Sometimes the response is that I can think rationally and I can say, oh my gosh, I need to call my sponsor, right? Like, and then I call my sponsor and she can guide me, you know, to these beautiful steps that we have that guide us me back, right? Back to this relationship with this power, right? I don't have to be a prey to that misery and that depression that they talk about, you know, there are some times that I can still, sit in my own self-pity sometimes. Like recently I didn't get a raise that I was told I was going to get a raise at my job. And I sat in that self-pity for a little while until I talked to somebody else. And I said, you know, they're like, how can you control what you're going to get paid? Right. Thank you for the timer. And I can't, right? I'm powerless over that. I've done everything that I need to do. I've talked to my boss. She's talked to her boss. Let's restore myself to sanity, right? Let's go back to the soundness of mind. Let's look and see who needs help in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? When I turn to this power, it really, that soundness of mind lets me just be able to be. I was never able to just be. I was never able to just sit quietly because I had chatter constantly in my head, right? And when I was, the chatter would constantly lead me back to a drink. I'd pick up a drink and then I'm back off to the races. You know, I haven't had to pick up a drink in a little while. And so the chatter doesn't so much take me back to a drink anymore, but the chatter can make me, you know, do other things like overexercise or pick up some ice cream, you know, the chatter, anything to get me away from that emotional upheaval. And what you guys have taught me is that when I go back to the power will realign me with itself. And so that I have a quiet mind and I have a loving heart, right? That I have this freedom. And when I'm free, when I'm in that moment, when I'm returned to sanity, I can fulfill the purpose that I have here, right? To help other alcoholics. Maybe to help, you know, other people, period, like to just be of service. And in that doing that, it just, gosh, it gives my life a whole new meaning. All because I've come to believe. And isn't it interesting? I've been looking at this, that in step two, right, we come to believe in a power greater than ourselves. And then we get to step three, and it says that we make a decision to believe that in God as I understand him. So it's like the power has now come to God as I understand him. And then you get to tradition two, and it says, we now have this ultimate authority, a loving God. And I think that's really what you guys have shown me more than anything, right? That soundness of mind comes to believing in this power. This power is an almighty loving authority in my life. And when I am willing to trust, and by trusting, it means usually that I follow through with the rest of the steps for whatever that's going on, you know, I'm able to live free and I'm able to walk this earth and I'm able to be of service. So I just want to thank you for letting me be of service today.